From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's Cool Science Radio, science and technology that's interesting and entertaining. I'm Lynn Ware Peek.
And I'm John Wells. Today in the program, we speak with Dave Evans of Stanford University. He's the co-founder of the Life Design Lab in the Stanford Design Program, and as many college and high school graduates are walking across the stage to receive their diploma, well, they can learn a new technique for designing their life. It's called design thinking. It's adopted from the world of technology, design, and a little bit of real life.
Good morning, John. Then we speak with local resident Jeff Atkinson, who is the CEO and founder of a startup called Huckabye. Now, you've heard of search engine optimization, or SEO, right? Well, he tells us why his company is improving year-over-year organic search growth for their client websites to the tune of 153%. That's a good statistic.
That's a good number.
This is Cool Science Radio. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Hi, this is Shelley Barris, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity. Do you have gently used furniture, appliances, cabinets, or building materials that need a new home? Donate them to the Habitat Restore and help local hardworking families. You can bring your items to us or schedule a pickup at 435-658-1400. We are a nonprofit and proud to be a KPCW supporter.
Beth here, owner of Peak Art and Frame, longtime supporters of KPCW. At Peak Art and Frame, we carry a wide variety of framing options, and our design staff can help with any project for your home, office, or gallery. Open Monday through Saturday and located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Juliana Miller from Miller Orthodontics, a proud supporter of The Local View with Randy Barton. With a combined 45 years of orthodontic experience, my husband and I are now raising our family and working full-time in the Park City community. There are so many reasons to smile in Park City. More information at m2ortho.com.
Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peek, here with John Wells. Well, our next guest, Dave Evans, is taking design thinking to a new level. So when true innovation is happening, whether it's in technology or, in the case of our guest, with industrial design or just about any other task that you achieve through design, the way you think through the design and how you apply it is what gets you to the best product. So there's prototyping involved, many iterations on an idea, and so should be your approach to how you design your life. Now, especially for young people trying to figure out how to, well, you know, figure out their life and what direction they're going. This, of course, especially pertinent as high school kids and college kids are graduating right now. Dave Evans is a co-founder of the Design Lab in the design department at Stanford University, as well as a former leader of Apple's PowerBook product line and a CEO of a design consultancy. He joins us to talk about the book he's co-written with Bill Burnett. It's called Designing Your Life, How to Build a Well-Lived, Joyful Life. Dave Evans, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks, Lynn and John. Good to be with you.
Great to have you. In fact, great to have you back. And we talked to you last fall sometime, and I love this book so much, and I feel like I talk about it all the time, especially to young people. And so it's great to have you back around this time when so many young people are trying to figure out what to do with their lives. But take us back to, I don't know, sort of the beginning. Take us back to your history and how you arrived at design thinking. Maybe a little bit about when you were graduating from college or in college.
Well, neither Bill nor I can take credit for actually coming up with design thinking. That actually, we're in the third generation of design leadership at Stanford. The design thinking program, originally referred to as human-centered design, was conceived back in the 60s. We are the 57-year-old eldest interdisciplinary program at Stanford University. So we've been trying to come up with a better way to innovate new ideas for a long time. But it's only in these last 10 years since lab that we've been applying design thinking to the wicked problem of designing your own life. I mean, it is human-centered design. You think we would have thought, hey, how about if we apply human-centered design to humans? Maybe that'll work, which has turned out to be the case. But we came to that surprisingly late in the day. My beginning of this process was exactly what, you know, the current college grad is struggling with. When I was 19 and a sophomore myself, I really had no idea what to do with my life. And most of the advice I got was frankly terrible. So nobody was teaching me how to figure life out. And I did it the hard way, like most of us of my generation. And then all along the way, I thought, there's got to be a better way to do this. And that's really what began my own journey that ended up finally first teaching at Cal Berkeley and then coming over when Bill joined Stanford as the director of the design program, who said, hey, let's use this design technique and help students out. And it's gone pretty well.
Yeah. So, yes, you say we're in the third generation of design thinking. And it's funny, I was at a conference recently and they showed an old YouTube video of IDEO back in the 80s. And when they were using design thinking to design a shopping basket. And it was the first, you know, maybe one of those first times that you involved people from different backgrounds, levels of expertise, engineers and sociologists and marketers. And it was fascinating. And it's funny that, you know, YouTube video from the 80s is still relevant today. But it's great stuff.
Yeah, that was ABC Nightline Television did a segment on the deep dive on IDEO. That was about 10 years after the company had been started, actually. And they used a redesign of a shopping cart as an example of the five steps of the design process. And we still teach those five steps pretty much the same way. We use that video clip ourselves.
That's so much fun. So why is it, and I know we're moving away from this as young people are not saying, you know, in high school, oh, I'm going to be an engineer, you know, come hell or high water, I'm going to go through an engineering program, I'm going to be an engineer, I'm going to stay with that for 35 years. And, you know, it's not that we do that so much anymore, but we haven't quite evolved into the next thing, which is what you're trying to help in your book. Kind of produce.
Yeah, in some ways it's worse than ever, you know, because back in, you know, 50s, 60s, and even the 70s, you know, well, what are you going to be when you grow up, young man? And you got to get going and get started and get your career, you know, and things look like they're going to be much longer term. And of course, we didn't know and we all were faking it, but you had to play the game. And to play the game, of course, you went out and got a good job. So while you were slowly figuring it out, you were at least employed and self-supporting and something was happening. And that's fine. But the problem is, and even the Grant study, one of the longest running human studies ever done, started in 1936 with a sophomore class at Harvard with a bunch of young men, including John F. Kennedy and a bunch of other people you never heard of, you know, studying those guys lifelong, it became very clear that most people don't really figure out who they are and what they want to do until they're into their 30s. And you don't feel really good about it until your late 40s, early 50s, i.e. it takes a lifetime to become your fully formed self. We've known that for a long, long time, but we keep asking these dumb questions like, have you got it figured out yet? And now that we live in the gig economy and we all know we're going to have lots of jobs and probably a couple of different careers and everybody thinks that's really cool, but still actually at the same time, the question, well, what's your passion and is this really it? And are you being your best self? You're not settling, are you? Those narratives have become stronger than ever. So now that we have all the flexibility in the world and we have the internet, we know everything, we can do anything we want, then of course it's got to be absolutely awesome and just the right thing or you're blowing it and you're settling. That narrative is scaring the daylights out of people and it's really crushing souls right and left, which is why we're really trying to encourage people, look, there's lots of right answers to who you are and you don't know before you try things. So let's learn how to build our way forward incrementally and make life an interesting project because you can't start at the end.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dave Evans, who co-wrote Designing Your Life, most successful class at Stanford. And you can't pack that many people into a room, so they decided to write a book, and we're talking about their book this morning. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone give somebody the advice, well, what is your passion? You know, when they're asking about, you know, I'm not sure what I should do,
yep.
Those sorts of things. And it really sets them up incorrectly, doesn't it?
You know, we're getting the Bill and I are sort of getting a reputation as the anti-passion guys. We're not actually anti-passion. We're anti the presupposition that you know your passion at the age of 19 or 20 and it's the right thing to organize the rest of your adult life. I mean, that's what the question really says. And research shows 8 out of 10 people answer the question, what's your passion, John? You know, either, well, I don't know yet, or which one did you want to hear about first? Well, so neither question, I don't know it or I've got too many, neither one of those answers, which is a legitimate answer for 8 out of 10 people, means I don't use passion as my starting place. For most people, we think passion is the outcome of a well-designed life, not the input to start it.
Exactly. Well, misery loves company, they say. And if everybody would just understand that there are a lot of people in the same boat. In your book, you write that in the United States alone, more than 31 million people between the ages of 44 and 70 want what is called an encore career, work that combines personal meaning, continued income, and social impact. And some of those 31 million have found their encore careers, but many others have no idea where to begin and fear it's too late to make that big change. So what's the one, I mean, there's a lot of pieces, to this book, but is, is the one takeaway that it's not the question you ask, it's reframing an existing question?
Yeah, we talk about reframes a lot, which is, you know, you want to ask a generative question. You want to ask all questions believe something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what'd you major in, John? Anthropology. Oh, what are you going to do with that? The question to the college student, what are you going to do with your major, believes that your major determines your future. Well, Stanford offers 68 different undergraduate majors. There are 7.2 billion people in the world. There are more than 68 things we do. So when you say, what are you going to do with that? The implication is your major determines your career. It's not true. 80% of college graduates are working outside their field of baccalaureate study by between 5 and 10 years from graduation, i.e. almost nobody is doing what they studied when they were 19. You know, it turns out the about to be an encore person, the person somewhere between, you know, 50 and 69, who's thinking about the one more thing they're going to try, those people are in a very similar situation to the about-to-graduate student, which is, you know, I've never done this before. There's the big, wide world in front of me, and I'm not really sure what it is I want. They ask the same question from a very different place in life, but they have the same task. And we say, look, if you don't know where to start, it's really simple. Get curious, talk to people, and then start trying stuff. And the get curious is you want to lean into the energy of your own curiosity. You know, let's say I'm a late stage career person thinking about, you know, quote, retiring or disengaging and doing something else. But I don't have any avocations. I don't have any other passions than the career I've had. I don't know where to start. Well, look, everybody's got something going on that they're interested in, whether it's a geography or an issue or a technology or a class of people they think are interesting. There's something that's more interesting to you than everything else. And let's go lean into that with some conversations and some little trial experimentation to see what can grow in you. You curate your curiosity, and that can turn into eventually even a passion.
Curating your curiosity. I love that. You know, so many college students right now, they're even after your freshman year, there's this tremendous pressure to get this great internship. Now, that great internship, a lot of times, ends up actually turning you off of whatever it is you get the internship in, because as it turns out, you've been filing papers and making coffee and never really learning anything.
Right.
And this is something that you are really advising against. And what do you replace it with?
Well, actually, this is such a big issue. We've just recently received some funding. One of our developmental projects in the lab is to reconceive the whole concept of internship. We call it designing your experience of the world. You know, so traditionally, the college internship is for a summer. For 10 weeks, you take this job, this entry-level job, and you get some exposure to an industry or a field. Well, you know, you can everywhere from a fabulous experience. You've got this wonderful company and this really nurturing manager that gives you lots of exposure and spends lots of time training you, letting you do significant work, all the way down to the cheap labor job where you're buried in the windowless room in a basement filing, and everything in between. And even in the great experience, at the end of that summer, you've had exactly one exposure to exactly one organization with probably one boss and a handful of colleagues, and that's it. And so now I understand broadcasting, or now I understand medicine because I've done this one thing for 10 weeks. We say, look, part of being a young, anybody, much less a young person, is to get exposure to what it's like out there in that part of the world you don't yet know anything about. And there are lots of forms of experience you can have to have those engagements that vary all the way from just a cup of coffee before work and tell me your story, all the way up to a gap year where I'm going to go over and I'm going to get a full-time job doing this living in Germany. You know, a summer internship is one of those forms. It's rather a large and fairly expensive one. We're just encouraging people to design lots of forms of experience, ways of getting to know the world in all different kinds of sizes and expense levels, so that by the time they're making the decision, they're making a really well-informed decision. You know, one summer in one company is not enough to direct the rest of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. So my question is, how are you, I mean, obviously through your popular class at Stanford, you are giving the tools to the students and encourage
right.
them to design these various experiences. But how do you bring the employers on board? Because aren't employers sort of stuck in that old model of, oh yeah, we'll take a summer intern and we'll have them do this and, you know, we'll kind of push them over in the corner. How do you bring employers along? Is that the student's job?
Well, you know, we're doing it two ways. First of all, we're trying to get the students to be smart to play the game to win. You know, look, here's the way the world is currently organized, and design always starts with accept. Just because we are design thinkers doesn't we know magic. We can't suddenly change the employment scenario. We're not going to change modern capitalism and the way it's practiced, you know, overnight. So look, go out there and, you know, this is the way the game is played. Engage it as intelligently as you can. If students, you know, tips on networking and tips on communication and how to write the resume and how to get a conversation with people inside companies before you're getting an interview. When you ask for a job, the best way to get a job is not ask for a job, because then you're going to get rejected. Ask for the story. You know, I want to find out from, you know, Lynn and John, what's it like to be a broadcaster is, you know, what's that story is rather than, hey, can you hire me to be on the air? You know, the answer to that is no. So that's what's on the student side. Now, you asked about employers. I'm not dodging the question. That's tougher. Now, I have, in the last month, been in front of four different conferences full of human resource executives. I've now talked with people who employ over 10 or 20 million employees in the last, you know, frankly, just about 2 or 3 months, because we're beginning to, you know, talk to the employment side in conferences and places like that. And I'm encouraging people to say, look, this doesn't work. You know, the truth is college students are exploring the world. They don't have the answer all figured out. Rather than you make them pretend to know the job they want and you pretend you're going to hire them forever, let's all just be a lot more honest about this together and say, like, look, hey, here's what we do, you know, at Acme Bootwear or at nanotechnology company, whatever. And what is it you want to learn, Lynn? What, you know, where do you think you're going to be trying to make a dent in the world? And let's be clear about the way this conversation goes and give different kinds of conversations between employers and particularly entry-level new professionals so we can grow this thing a little smarter. I think we're a long way from that happening, but it's just beginning. There are some positive signs, a couple of companies who are doing it different.
Dave, I'm tied into the business side as well, and I know people that employ a few people and people that also have much larger businesses and employ a lot of people. And every single one of them is complaining about I don't know how to manage the millennial today. I don't know, you know, things have changed,
yep.
You know, that sort of thing. Can you give, you know, for our listeners out there that might be on the employer side, can you give some advice on how to look at the millennial candidate and how to provide the best environment for them?
Yeah, you know, we get asked about this a lot, and of course, I spend a tremendous amount of time with millennials and soon to be Gen X. You know, the eldest millennials are approaching 40 now, and we're about done with them. We're about to have Gen Z coming up behind them. So here's the you know, and there's a lot said about this, you know, the whiny, entitled millennial, and they're hard to manage and what have you. And, you know, that's not most of Bill and my experience. We mostly think they're fabulous. But here's the thing. What the millennial generation is doing is they're saying, look, what they're really saying to employers is, I'm actually doing a life design. I'm designing my life. I'm not just designing my career. I'm not just going to do whatever it takes to get ahead and be successful in this company, and I'm going to defer the rest of my life, and then, you know, 10 or 15 years from now when I've earned my chops and I've established my credibility, then I'm going to say, like, well, what about the rest of my life? they're looking at their parents, they're looking at their elders and going, you know, the way you guys live is crazy. I mean, you're worked to death, you're overstressed, you're overweight, you're out of shape, you know, you're dying of heart attacks. That doesn't look like an attractive life to me. So it's not just like, oh, I want a really cool job and I have to bring my yoga mat to the office with me, which is sort of a caricature, as opposed to, no, wait a minute, I'm going to live holistically. And what we're finding, by the way, is, you know, now that virtually all the millennials are talking this way and sort of, you know, doing a mass demonstration, we want a legitimate life, not just a cool job. Frankly, all their 40, 50, and 60-year-old colleagues are saying, well, I've always wanted that, too. I didn't know I was allowed to ask. So, frankly, we think the entire workforce is now pushing toward a more holistic approach of negotiating with their employer around broader life goals than just being professionally successful. And that's a healthy thing. So if you're going to now here's the challenge for the millennial, the early career person, they want to make a big impact in the world. They want to do it right away. And, you know, Simon Sinek is one of the guys who talks about this a lot. He has a great interview from October talking about this millennial challenge. And the thing he points out is, you know, they're used to everything happening immediately. Truly anything I want on demand. But the thing you can't have on demand are significant relationships and deep job or vocational satisfaction. That takes a long time to develop. And they don't have a lot of skills or experience in long-term development stuff. Because in school, it's all about learning. You know, take a 10-week class, pass it on, I go to the next thing. I'm getting new information every 6 seconds. I'm refreshing my RSS feed. I'm hearing new all the time.
Right.
In work, we're not going for the new thing all the time. We're going for do it again, repetition to gain mastery so that now I'm really serving the customer and the served entity as well. So in work, we focus on repetition and mastery. In school, we focus on novelty and new material. Try having repetition compete with novelty.
Mm.
That's really tough. How do you do it as a manager? This is why I'm bored now. I did that yesterday. I want to do something new today, the new employee might say. And so here's the challenge, because, of course, business isn't organized around novelty. Business is organized around success and delivering. So if you're a manager, what you have to learn how to do is give really thorough, thoughtful, meaningful feedback. Because if I'm going to ask people to repeat stuff and do it again, and I want them not to get bored, the way to not be bored is by having significant personalized feedback. You did this well. You did this less well. Let's work on this now. Here's why it matters. Here's the impact of this slight nuanced improvement I'm looking for in your performance as it relates to the mission of the organization and our end user customer or collaborators. Now, that's a convert. It's not just do it because I said so. I'm the boss. I got to go. Just get it. Do it again.
Right.
That's not going to work. You got to spend a little bit more time, but it's not a lot. But what you have to do is pay a lot of attention, and you have to give feedback that says to the individual what you're doing is meaningful. This change I'm asking for is rooted in reality. Let's try it again. It's still going to be tough, but without detailed, articulated feedback that connects the work of the individual to the final outcome we all care about, if you can't make those dots connect, they're going to get bored, they're going to quit, and they're going to go down the road.
Well, for our listeners at home, this is not just a book, Designing Your Life, that tells you how Dave Evans designed the mouse or had the mouse team at Apple incorporating the mouse into the laptop and then just take that type of stuff and just apply that to your life. There's a number of exercises. It's very specific. And Dave, I would tell you that I have not gone through all the exercises yet, but I will. And I have started, and from 40,000 feet, I did my dashboard last night on rating work,
okay,
play, love, and health. And I can tell you that I've already had an aha moment, and I know about some stuff that I need to focus on, and I'm starting to reframe questions. So it's kind of like a new way of looking at things. You're kind of retraining yourself to reframe these questions and look at things differently. And I just wanted to throw this in that I see a lot of value in this book.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, trying to ask the right question, we think, is critically important. You know, very often people fail, not because they did the wrong thing or had the wrong outcome. They're working on the wrong problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that you said earlier about the anthropology degree. And I think a lot of people right now, maybe today's anthropology degree is environmental studies. And people go, what are you going to do with that? That's a soft science. It's not really a hard science. And it is so, it's kind of demeaning. It's a demeaning question, I think, because, and I remember getting asked this, I had a degree in linguistics. What are you going to do with that? And you immediately feel like you're a loser and like you don't know what you're going to do with it. You just kind of followed something that, I don't know, you liked the professor in your first linguistics class or whatever it was. And I just want you to give our listeners a better question to ask when we have these conversations with young people.
Well, if you're talking to an about to graduate college student, you know, and not unlikely in the conversation, you're going to find out what degree they got. Oh, gee, what degree did you acquire? You know, Lynn, when were you? Well, I picked up a degree in linguistics. Really? Now tell me about what that degree means to you.
Yeah.
So you could just ask a different question. So what did you appreciate about that degree that you got?
Yeah.
You know, and if you really want to say, you know, and what are you thinking about as you graduate from college, and what role do you think your formal education versus the informal part of college plays in the next step you're about to take?
Yeah.
So just a slight reframe of those questions leaves a little more room. I mean, it's understandable that people kind of would want to know what you studied for 4 years relates to what you're going to do for the next five. But we frame the question in a way that says, well, what are you going to do with it? What you're going to do must be what that thing was for. And that's a completely false assumption. So let's just lighten up a little bit. Let's leave a little room and treat people like human beings rather than robots.
I love that. That's great advice. We don't have time to ask you about this fantastic chapter called How Not to Get a Job. It's one of my favorites in the book, but people should just run out and buy this book.
And well, there's a one-liner for that, which is don't ask for the job, ask for the story. The best way to get a job is not to apply online and not to ask for a job. It's to go ask for a story. Do that a couple of dozen times, and you'll get the job.
Dave, I want to thank you for joining us this morning, but I wanted to mention that you've taught this class to so many kids. Again, it's the most popular class at Stanford. And you and Bill provide a guarantee to your students, office hours for life. You can take a class and you'll provide office hours forever, period. And that's how you frame that, right? That's pretty good.
That's how we say it.
Yeah. Okay.
Love it.
Thank
Dave
you.
Evans, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Great talking to you guys.
You too. And the book is Designing Your Life, How to Build a Well-Lived, Joyful Life. I'm telling you, I love this book. We will be back to talk about a really interesting local startup. It's all about search engine optimization and more complicated portions of that or concepts within it. With Jeff Atkinson, who started his business right here in Old Town, when we return.
The Vail Epic Promise Foundation is a proud supporter of KPCW. It now can provide Vail employees with emergency relief grants. Information about employee grants is available at epicpromise.com.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Hi, this is Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. The Epic School Kids program gives all children across the state of Utah from kindergarten through fifth grade 5 days of skiing plus 1 day rental and lesson. More information at parkcitymountain.com.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. We're just speaking with Dave Evans, who co-wrote Designing Your Life, How to Build a Well-Lived, Joyful Life. We're now going to be speaking with Jeff Atkinson. Now you've all heard of SEO or search engine optimization, but about the time you figure out what it means and how to drive more traffic to your website, the algorithms, well, they change. And that's why you hire someone like our next guest, Jeff Atkinson. He's a local resident, a Dartmouth graduate, a former senior VP of advertising over Stock.com. And when it came to starting his own business, he chose Park City, and specifically Old Town Park City. His startup is called Huckabye. And when this guy talks, you'll want to listen closely to learn about things like structured data markup and why real-time fresh content is so important and what that content should be. Jeff, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, good to have you. Tell us about your company and tell us about the value you provide to your clients.
Sure. So search engine optimization, I think, is a critical part of business, online business and business in general. So what we do is we help companies rank better in Google, and we've tried to align ourselves as best we can with the future direction of Google and where they're heading. And we do that through software and software that you implement on your website. And that's around these complicated terms called structured data markup automation and real-time content. But that's what we provide through our software. And we're located right here in Park City. We have some really big clients, some really small clients, and we just help them understand how to get their footprint on the internet bigger and bigger.
Does Google compete with you? Do they provide products or offerings that also do the same thing?
You know, they provide a way to analyze our software. They have a tool called a structured data testing tool, but they don't compete with us. We've really tried to align ourselves with their mission statement and their business model as best we can. And by doing so, our clients' websites are better understood by Google, which is what Google really wants. They want to understand your website as well as possible.
So, Jeff, take us back, I don't know, let's go back about 15 years in the whole world of search engine optimization, SEO. And it was a way, you know, at the most rudimentary level of getting people to come to find your website if they're doing a Google search or a search for information. Yours pops up first. So it started off with, certain words that you would want to make sure that you had embedded. And then, you know, people say, well, you have to have a blog on your website, and that's going to drive traffic. And I think what happens is, just for the general consumer, we kind of get stuck in what we first heard about it, and we're still thinking, I got to get a blog going on my website. I mean, talk a little bit about that and then where we are now with SEO.
Yeah, absolutely. So 15 years ago, you could do stuff like that. You could pack a bunch of keywords or search terms into your HTML and stuff them in the footer. You could do all sorts of tricks to try to, you know, rank better in Google. And really every single algorithm update that Google has done in the past 15 years, there's some piece of it in there that's trying to get rid of those tricksters. So you do have to do, your site has to be relevant. You do have to do good, honest SEO. And it's a totally different ballgame now. It really is. They look at websites and understand websites so much differently than they did 15 years ago. I mean, they're Google. They're the best in the business. There's a reason why they became the best in the business. And that's a whole different story if you want to get into it. But those sort of tricks are gone. The game has totally changed. And they're just getting better and better. And so websites need to do the same. Keep up.
Yeah. So before, it could be sort of these little tricks that you learned along the way. But now it's not us as humans learning the tricks. It is software learning the tricks to be able to follow the changing algorithms that Google kicks out.
Well, there really isn't any more tricks. You can't. That's their one thing with Google. You can't trick them anymore. Those days are over. What you can do, though, is make your site more understandable by Google. And that's what they want. And they not only just understandable by Google, but if you make your site more relevant and more interesting to users, then Google's going to like it as well. So, you know, their goal is to put the most relevant website in front of their users that they possibly can. And so really, as a company and as someone that manages a website or whatever, you just want to be putting the best website out there, but also have Google be able to understand it. And that's really what structured data markup is. It is a language in which you can now communicate your website to Google authoritatively rather than them coming in and scanning HTML and trying to guess what you're all about.
They say that content is king. Everybody wants content, and you have a product called Huck News. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great old SEO phrase. I'm impressed. content is king, absolutely. So Huck News is a content curation tool. content is expensive, and I could go off on blogs and why you actually shouldn't do a blog. You should be integrating content into a website that actually sells or converts users or gets them to do whatever you want them to do. But Hooked News is a product that's a content curation tool, and content's expensive, but there's tons of content out there on the internet that's really valuable and very useful. YouTube videos, Instagram posts, stuff that's out, you know, news articles, this interview. There's all sorts of content out on the internet that's shareable and wanting to be used and is relevant for a website. So this tool enables websites to leverage that content and then write a comment about why it's relevant to any given page on their website. And essentially, they end up with this news feed of constant, you know, very informative information pumping through their website. And that's useful for users, and it's useful, Google likes that as well.
So JPL Labs in Pasadena, California, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, is a organization that we have on our show from time to time. And if we had a website and we wanted to grab something that they had, like for an example, they have a spacecraft called the Cassini, which has been studying Saturn and orbiting Saturn for a long time. And now this thing is diving between the rings of Saturn and the main body of the planet. It's really cool. And they're providing all sorts of videos and all sorts of write-ups by the scientists that are analyzing this. But I think they're kind of proprietary. When do you need to get permission? I mean, I understand you've got a tool that allows you to take some content, you can put some words around it and sort of make it and put it into your own website. But when do you have to go out and get permission for this type of stuff?
So really the rule of thumb that we use when we talk to clients on how to use Hooked News is anything that the owner of the content wants it to be shared. So as soon as they don't want it to be shared, I wouldn't be using it.
They'd let you know.
They'd let you know, yeah, legally perhaps. So really anything that is wanting to be shared. We use the example of, you know, my days at Overstock and Dyson Vacuums. Dyson Vacuums is a huge product for Overstock. Why would Overstock film a video on a Dyson vacuum when Dyson is spending millions of dollars filming their CEO vacuuming through the house with their new fancy vacuum? So that content is wanting to be shared, and it's very high quality, and they've put a lot of money behind it, so why not use that content and leverage it instead of trying to film your own video yourself?
Sure.
Makes sense. So you started your business, and I said here in Old Town because I met you in Old Town, and I knew you were on your way to work, which is something we can talk about, the Rockwell Room,
yep.
Which is a new, I'm blanking on the word for
shared
office space. There we go. And it's above OP Rockwell's here in Old Town on Main Street. So why Park City? I mean, you came to Utah for Overstock.com, and mm-hmm. you were there for how long?
I was there for about 7 years.
Okay. Yep. And then you fell in love with Utah.
Yep.
But you said, it's Park City. And why starting your business here?
Well, one, I'm not going anywhere. I love Park City. I think it's a really, you know, I love working here. I love being here. But I also find from a business perspective that it's very appealing to be in Park City. It's appealing to attract employees. It's very appealing to have clients come visit. but the one thing that I really enjoy is that we're just so much different than Silicon Valley. You know, I go to Silicon Valley and my anxiety and stress levels just jump through the roof. And I see other founders of startups there that are constantly checking their Twitter feeds and checking TechCrunch and, you know, going to accelerators. And I feel like that their eye gets taken off the ball. And being in Park City, we kind of have our blinders up, which I believe is a good thing because we're confident in our business. We're confident in ourselves and our employees and our technology. And so we're not distracted by the typical Silicon Valley vibe of a company. So, and I think when people talk to Huckabye, either as a potential client or as a potential employee, that vibe comes through and that culture comes through that we are a different type of startup, and we're not in that, you know, we're not trying to be a Silicon Valley type startup. We are a Park City startup, and they like that about us.
So you're not multitasking?
No, I don't believe in multitasking.
Yeah.
No. keep it pretty simple. I mean, I walked here. You know where my house is. It's on Sweet Alley. So I walked here. I walked to work. It's about 100 feet away. I try to keep things pretty simple.
That's low stress. Not a lot of commuting stress there.
There's no commuting stress in my life, no.
And a long walk to the radio station this morning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's farther than, this is farther than my office, believe it or not. And I live at the top of Sweet Alley, so.
So you mentioned on your website that in the fourth quarter of last year, 2016, that your clients experienced 153%, I think, increase in search results. Can you talk about who your clients are and the value that you provide?
Yeah, well, first off, I know that's sort of a crazy number, 153% growth for our clients, but that was just a great quarter. We happen to be aligned with some fantastic growing businesses that are just booming right now. So that we feel very, very fortunate for that. We can't take all of that success, but we certainly were a part of it, which is cool.
Can you mention who your customers are?
Yeah,
some of them?
Yeah. So they range. One fantastic client is, we have two clients actually here in Park City. POC Sports, the helmet and goggle company. We also have Shred, the Ted Ligety's company. So we range from companies, you know, those are relatively big businesses, but we go all the way up to like an SAP. SAP is a client of ours who is, believe it or not, also has Park City ties. And that's actually how I got to know them. They have a vice president that lives here in town. Always blown away by the tech people that I stumble upon in Park City. It's kind of mind blowing, actually.
It's nice.
It is nice. Yeah, absolutely. So they range from, we have startups. There's this thing called domain authority that we look at a lot, like how important is a website in Google's eyes. So we literally have clients with a domain authority of one, meaning they literally launched last week or something, and they're looking for a solution that will help get them traction and SEO results, to an SAP. You know, that's a multi-billion-dollar international corporation. So it really ranges. What I find so great about that is if you can have a client spending the same amount that's a startup that's bootstrapping and finds that value in Huckabye all the way up to an SAP, then you have a pretty big potential market.
So what makes you unique? It's your software is what you do. What makes you unique among your competitors other than you're based in Park City?
Great question. And the biggest thing that we do that's different than really anyone else is the automation of structured data markup. That is an emerging technology that Google really leans on. They find it very important. And we automate that for websites, and we're the only ones that do that right now. So we're definitely unique. we find the SEO industry in general is mainly based with, it's a lot of sort of snake oil salesmen. There's a lot of agencies and consultants, and there's a lot of analytics software that's great software, but it's just telling you what's wrong or how to, you know, what's going on with your website or what your rankings are. We like to say we don't focus on any of that. We just want to do stuff that makes your site more understandable by Google and therefore drives results. So we're really focused on the results end of things, not the analytics and rank tracking and consulting. We're trying to build pure software that focuses on that. And that's pretty unique in the SEO business. We don't see a lot of other players doing that sort of thing.
Mm. Our guest is Jeff Atkinson. He is the founder and CEO of Huckabye, and that is spelled HUCKABUY.com. And it's funny, the first time you mentioned the business name to me, I wondered where that came from, and it's so simple. So tell us.
Yeah, it's a great story. Our company is named after my nephew, Huck Anderson, and my sister, his mother, used to call him Huckabye when he was a little boy. And we were all here in Park City. This is a while ago. Before I even really had the business model of Huckabye, I was just registering domains because I knew I wanted to start something someday. My sister said Huckabye in the house. My mom was like, you should check that one out, Jeff. And it was open and free. So I registered Huckabye.com. And then when it was time to launch Huckabye, we were going through names, and that's just the one that stuck. Everybody likes the name. It's a great name. And it's hard to get a .com. You see a lot of startups without a .com. We work with a lot of startups that just can't get a good domain anymore. And so we feel very fortunate to have our name, and it has a good story behind it too. So that makes it even better.
So, Jeff, the SEO industry you described as a little bit of rhetoric in there. I certainly understand that. And some people just tell you what's wrong, but they're not exactly providing value. So for people that look at this industry and they're not ready to make a commitment to your company, but they'd like to try the product first, do you have the ability to provide that?
So depends on how qualified they are. If it looks like, because it does require some work on our end to get up and running. Okay. So really all the heavy lifting on our end is right up front, and then it's installed and it's running and it's doing great. So we make sure that if we are going to give someone a free trial, that they're qualified. But once someone usually gets on the software, they're quite happy. So they typically stick around.
Right. Well, you could also guarantee the product, I guess, right? You could.
That's where we're going for, is to get to the point where we guarantee it, and where, we're early days. We have to go after the clients that we're a good match for, and they're a good match for us. And someday, though, we do hope to have a product that literally you can just go on the website, click a button, start your free trial, get it for 3 months, install it yourself, never have to talk to a human being, and be off to the races. Just like a lot of like Salesforce.com or whatever. But we're not there yet. We have we're sort of more on the targeting more of the high end right now. But that just is what makes sense for our business model at this moment. We'd love to get there.
Do you think about end game at all? About I want to keep going. I want to stay private. I want to be acquired. I've got a going public strategy. Have you thought about what you'd like to do with this?
Of course. Yeah, we think about it a lot. We do have investors. Yes, we do think about that. Okay. Do you want to? What my answer for that is, like the actual strategy?
Yeah, if you're comfortable sharing it,
I'd say. The biggest thing right now is to increase the value of the business as much as we possibly can. And we're happen to be in a bit of a hockey stick right now, which is exciting, really exciting. So that's our big thing right now is in our business, it's what's called monthly recurring revenue. It's a monthly recurring revenue business, which are very valuable businesses, especially for companies that are looking to, tech companies that are in this software as a service, MRR, monthly recurring revenue model. If they see one that's providing value and has happy clients and a large amount of this recurring revenue, it becomes a very attractive business. So basically the more clients we have, the higher we drive that number, the happier they are. We just, whether it's an acquisition, it's a company that's making, pumping out cash, or I don't want to have an IPO, at least not as myself as CEO. But if we drive that number up and our clients are happy, then the business is worth a lot of money. And then we have a lot of good opportunities, good options to discuss.
Jeff, let's go back to Overstock.com. And no doubt your experience there, which was a really big experience with big dollars behind it, it led you in part to what you're doing now. So what was it? Was that the genesis, or did you know that you always wanted to start up your own thing?
Well, I knew I always wanted to do my own business, but I was smart enough to know that I didn't know anything yet. And so that's where Overstock came in for sure. I really started there. I was a sociology major. I didn't know anything about internet technology and e-commerce. Started on the ground floor, literally bottom rung, and just put some numbers up on the scoreboard, and was really fortunate to have the CEO and founder, Patrick Byrne, take me under his wing, which is just the opportunity of a lifetime for a young professional to have that sort of opportunity. So we got a lot. We did a lot of things. it was a wild ride, a lot of growth, incredible experience. And, it's just pretty rare for someone to have that experience as their first job coming out of college. So feel very fortunate for that. And absolutely, I wouldn't have any, Huckabye would not exist without Overstock and what I learned there. SEO is a major channel for them. And so very appreciative of my time there. And it was a great experience.
That's so great. You know, we were just speaking with Dave Evans, Designing Your Life. You heard part of that interview. And we were talking about that, you know, oh, what are you going to do with that sociology degree? Question that is so off-putting for young people. And
I love, I was listening in at the end of that interview and linguistics major. I love, you know, majors like that when looking at potential employees. Really, we look for a lot of times in what we do specifically, you can't learn in school. You just can't. They don't teach a lot of SEO courses. You know, I think they're starting to, which is great. But so we're looking really for general intelligence, the ability to communicate. I actually really like, I love liberal arts degrees. So anyways, I don't have any problem with hiring linguistics majors, but that might be a little bit different than normal.
Yeah.
I actually would prefer that to a business degree or a marketing degree, honestly, because I find people coming out with a business or marketing degree often have preconceived notions that don't jive exactly with what we do.
We also talked in the first interview about the importance of curiosity. So if you have someone that's curious and has a real strong motor, because as you know,
I totally agree with that.
You know, you have to, I mean, it is exhilarating your experience at Overstock and these startups. You're wearing lots of different hats, probably don't sleep much, and you're doing lots of things, and you learn a lot in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
So you need a strong engine, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Intellectual curiosity is one of the most important things that you can have in this industry. The ability to learn on the job, figure things out, and then, you need an engine. You need to want it, and you need to want not just your own personal success, but the company's success, and we find that makes a pretty appealing employee.
Jeff Atkinson, Huckabye, Search Engine Optimization. We'd like to have you back. We're going to keep our eye on you and see how this company's doing. This is very exciting.
I appreciate that. And while I'm on, we are looking for an account executive, a salesperson, located here in Park City. So if you have selling software experience, go to our website and let us know.
Okay, great. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're just going to thank our sponsors and button things up. But thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you guys
so much. Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate it.
And I wanted to mention that we can keep an eye on him. Literally, out these windows of the KPCW studios, we can keep an eye on Jeff as he does his morning commute between home and
and you'll see me walking down with the chocolate lab.
That's right. Love it. Stay with us.
Spend the day and cover billions of years at the Natural History Museum of Utah. The museum offers innovative exhibits and hands-on experiences. Native voices explore the traditions of Utah's native peoples. The Great Salt Lake Gallery tells the story of the largest saltwater lake in the Western Hemisphere. The Past Worlds exhibit includes more than a dozen new species of dinosaurs discovered right here in Utah. Visit nhmu.utah.edu. The Natural History Museum of Utah is a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
We want to thank the Natural History Museum of Utah.